Welcome to another edition of Green Legion Radio's Ice to Shorts Winter Sports with Sack and Diaz, brought to you by Bud Light. To everyone following us on Facebook Live, YouTube, and Twitter, hello. If you're listening in the future, wherever you guys like to listen to, iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Amazon, most especially the iHeartRadio app, please subscribe, download, rate, and review the shows. It helps us out. Sack and I are convening today to eulogize the Philadelphia 76ers 2020-2021 season. It began with modest hopes. It raised to a credenza of anticipation and excitement at a possible title run, and ended it like they all do. So before we get into that, though, we got, all right, yeah. I don't know if I can hear that. It's a little too soon. No. I mean, I don't know if I can hear that right now. Yeah, I don't think I can listen to that right now.
Oh, that's what.
Yeah, I don't want to listen to that today.
Okay, I thought you meant turn it up.
No. It's a little too soon for me, and probably for anyone that's tuning in right here. Real quick here before we get to, I see Lonnie's in the house. Diaz Nation represented. Thank you. It's a sad day in the nation. But first off, let's do a little business with thanking the fine folks of Bud Light, Mike Dorenzi, Bud Light, Bud Light Seltzer, Michelob Ultra, our friends at Stateside Vodka. We'll be at all of our tailgates again this year. We're very happy. MCS Residential and MCS Custom Cabinetry. I actually called Quimby the other day, and Greg picked up the phone. I don't know what they were doing together. And he kind of busted my stones a little bit there, too. So it's good that we've got our sponsors weighing in and giving me grief throughout the week.
Did he give you
too.
Crap about Diaz Nation, or was it about the Sixers?
No, just saying that whatever I had to say probably wasn't useful and that kind of stuff. We've got City Fitness locations throughout the city. Echelon Health and Fitness, if you're over by SAC in South Jersey. Cavs Rittenhouse in University City. The newly opened Cavs River Deck. Nexip, the ladies at Nexip, the safest way to drink hands-free. And, of course, the lovely ladies at Delilah's. Oh, SAC, I have been... I have been in a state of shock, in a state of confusion. I am angry. I am sad. I'm disappointed, obviously. Man, dude, it's a whirlwind of emotions. I don't even know where to begin. This season started, you know, after the disappointment, obviously, last year. They went out and made all these moves after Jimmy Butler left. And we thought they could be good. They got it for a good start. Then Simmons got hurt, the bubble, the pandemic. They were just not they had good players, but it wasn't a good fit. We hired Doc Rivers before the season. There was no preseason. We got Daryl Morey on board with less than a month to go. I mean, this is true for all teams. This is not an excuse or anything like that. This is true with all NBA teams. They had, 70 days between the finals and the first game of the next season. Daryl made a couple nice moves. We're like, okay, this is good. This should work better. My expectations for the team, probably they would settle somewhere between their highs and lows as far as standings go in the playoffs as previous years. Somewhere between the third seed and the sixth seed, somewhere right there. They were on top of the Eastern Conference the entire season. I don't know how many consecutive games or days or whatever. When Embiid went down right around that All-Star break, we're like, all right, well, he's going to be out for 10 games. But, so maybe they'll settle down two or three. And they played well without him, which is just not normally the case. They had the best home record in the entire NBA. They were the only Eastern Conference team with a positive or a plus 500 or above record on the road, which is something we've never seen from them before. They got the first seed. They got home court advantage all the way. I don't know if they were a better team than Milwaukee or Brooklyn, but the fact that they wouldn't have to face either of them until the Eastern Conference Finals, it was laid out perfectly. We saw the Bucks struggle a little bit against the Nets. Brooklyn was not at 100%. They're missing a bunch of their stars. It just had lined up perfectly. And as recently as 2 weeks ago, the sky was the limit. It was finals or bust with this team, and how quickly that can turn around. Starting just a week ago, the game one, Doc did not prepare this team well for game one versus Atlanta. They won game two and game three. We're feeling pretty good. And then it all went down a week ago, Monday night, when you know the Sixers were out by an 18-point lead. They had a 96% chance of winning that game in the third quarter, according to ESPN. And they fumbled it. And it's all right. Well, you know, they'll come back and be better at home. They had a 26-point lead game five, and they lost it. It's unfathomable. It's just crazy. They won game six, which was kind of, you know, everyone thought that they would, but it was, you know, it wasn't easy. And listen, second round, it's not the finals, but it's not like easy. And Atlanta is a better team than their record. That's not, you know, that's not an excuse, but I think we all took them a little too lightly, including the team, which is something that you just can't do. You know, game six, they won, and game seven, it was lined up Father's Day, 8 o'clock, prime time, the whole nation's watching, and it was just an tough game. If you tell me that the Sixers have a game seven at home and they held the best player on the other team to 5 of 23 shooting, and you tell me they lost, I wouldn't believe you. I just wouldn't believe you. It's just impossible to imagine. You know, in the end, there's a lot of culprits and blame going around. As a semi-detached Sixers fan here, Sack, what are your feelings on it? As I know that you're not devastated or heartbroken, you're disappointed, of course, but you know, looking back at the season here and really just the last couple of weeks, what are your first thoughts?
Well, I mean, you want to look back at the season, and they did exactly what I wanted them to do. I mean, they got the first seed in the Eastern Conference. They had home court advantage in the playoffs, at least until they would have gotten to the NBA Finals. And, you know, and you know, the other series in the East, Brooklyn and Milwaukee did exactly what we wanted them to do. They flat out killed one another for seven games. They even had to go into overtime to decide it. And you look at both of those teams, they played 12 guys total between the two of them. Each team played six guys in that game seven. And all we had to do, you know, listen, Sunday, to me, I saw it coming from a mile away. Because when Atlanta came back in games four and games five, they were playing with house money. Yeah, okay, they blew the game on Friday night at home. But the fact of the matter is this with this Sixers team. They had four home games in this playoff series against the Atlanta Hawks. Four. And they lost three. How is that possible? It can't be possible. It's not fathomable at all to believe that this Sixers team throughout the years could blow three games at home in a seven-game series against Atlanta. You do it to you do that to Brooklyn, you live with it. You do it to Milwaukee, you live with it. You can't live with this. You just can't. Because this team and this franchise, I say it all the time, Diaz, and you know, me and you go back and forth with one another. But guess what, brother? We're in the same boat here when it comes to the Flyers and the Sixers, okay? Because 1983 is just as bad as 1975, okay?
Well, it's almost
as bad. Come on, man. You're coming up almost, 40 years.
I mean, it's, I would say it's 20% worse, but okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
it's still bad. It's still bad, okay? That neither of these teams have done crap in my lifetime. Zero. I mean, we've been to a couple Stanley Cup finals. We've been to an NBA finals, but we've done nothing. Nothing. This team continues to crap the bed. They're 1-10, 1-11 in their last 11 second round matchups since 1985. That is awful. Awful. Like, you have to get to the 20, you have to get to that the final four teams. Like, I'm sorry. Like, if you get to the finals in any sport, the pain of losing in the finals isn't as bad as losing in the final four. Okay, all the NFC Championship games, all the Eastern Conference Finals, the you know, I've never seen the Sixers lose in Eastern Conference Finals.
They don't make enough to lose enough. Right, yeah,
you know, but like when the Phillies lost the NLCS in 2010. Like, they hurt more than the 2009 World Series and the 2010, you know, Stanley Cup Finals and the Super Bowl that the Eagles lost to the Patriots. Like, they hurt more because you didn't even get a chance to compete for the ultimate prize. All I wanted the Sixers to do this year was get to the Eastern Conference Finals and have a shot. And you look across everybody that is left right now, okay? You look out west, you look at the Clippers. They are vulnerable right now. They don't even have a healthy Kawhi Leonard. I don't know if the Suns are going to get back Chris Paul tonight. I heard a rumor that they might. But that's a team right there. They were one of the worst teams in the NBA last year. That's a team that when the lights are bright, they might melt. You never know. I think the Milwaukee Bucks, they're notorious chokers every year in the postseason. And that's a team that you were going to get because the Nets were so injury ravaged with their stars that they folded. They just couldn't. They didn't have enough. The same thing with the Lakers. Like, if there was ever a year to steal an NBA title, it was this year. It was this year.
It'll never line up as perfectly as it would. And there are that's why you play the whole season. And this is also why, like last year, you know, when I was saying it was asterisk year, so every team, the Sixers included, every team was affected by the schedule, by injuries. You know, we had a starter down,
but torn meniscus, you know,
torn meniscus. Yeah. And guess what? Atlanta was down a starter too. You know, so it's the same with everybody
on that end.
I mean, it's just hard to do. And it was for all the teams coming in to the tournament, you know, a month ago or whenever it started, a month and a half ago, the Sixers, it was just lined up as it's not easy, but the easiest out of all the teams available in the East or the West. It was just a disappointing end to such a promising situation a couple weeks ago. Now, this is the thing too. It's hard to, you know, taking the next day, you know, the morning after, it's just like rage and anger and everything like that. This team is different than the other. Every team is different every other year. The core players are still there, but from 2018, 19, 20, and 21, you know, this was a better fitting together team than any of those others with experience, playoff experience, championship experience in the starting lineup with Danny Green. And, you know, they obviously missed Danny Green. I would say that Atlanta missed DeAndre Hunter too. So, you know, I don't know if that evens it out.
Fair point.
But you know, so anyway, I figured we should just keep it easy here. Let's keep to the top three things, or the top three culprits that we've got here.
Well, real quick, you know what's funny? You know what's really funny about all of this is the teams that have played Atlanta, okay? So the Knicks win game two at their house, Madison Square Garden, and all their fans are chanting, "We want Brooklyn, we want Brooklyn." And then we are wrapping up our first round series with, you know, back against the Wizards in game five. And people are saying, "We want Brooklyn, we want Brooklyn." Well, both of those damn teams and both of those damn fan bases forgot about the Atlanta Hawks. And I'm not saying that the Atlanta Hawks are world beaters. They were vulnerable. We had them down on the mat. It kind of reminded me of Rocky II, where the trainer, he didn't want Apollo to take that next fight with Rocky. And he's like, "All I saw was that look in that man's eyes, and he kept coming after you like I never seen no man come after another man before. He just kept coming. It just kept coming. Let it go. Let it go."
I've never thought I would. We would need Quimby available here to look up on his board with all his stuff. No, hey, Lonnie, man. I got your question here. When we get to Simmons, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, but you're right. Unbelievable how everybody overlooked them, and the Bucks better not do the same thing.
That's right. This is the thing with Atlanta this year. Just kind of looking at them in a little capsule here. We all underestimated them. I think their record and where they were, well, I mean, they're probably, yeah, 4 or 5 seed, whatever.
Same record as the
Sixers. They had the same record as the Knicks. What,
beginning of March?
And they, with their little story here, it turns out that Lloyd Pierce from the Brett Brown coaching tree didn't really click well with Trae Young and John Collins. John Collins and Trae Young, as early as last year, their dads were going at each other in the media. John Collins once off the team, you know, and now they're like best buds on the court. It's funny what happens when you're winning.
Kind of like Embiid and Simmons.
Yeah. So with them, so when you know, some people say that Lloyd Pierce got a raw deal. Listen, if you're distancing yourself from the players, You know, that's how the NBA works. You gotta be a player's coach first. But they also Bogdanović was out.
I think the interim tag is going to be removed from Nate McMillan after this.
I think so too.
I think it's safe to say
he's not a particularly great coach. He just did some obvious things. We'll get to Doc Rivers. Just did some obvious things here that the Sixers decided not to do. These just some. I'm not saying it would work or they would have won the series or anything like that. But there's just some obvious things that anyone could point at and just say, why aren't they trying this or doing this? But McMillan comes in. Bogdanović gets healthy. I think Gallinari was out for a little bit. They come together. They lost three home games between beginning of March and the playoffs, something like that. I don't know the stat. They were better than what you would typically think. That said, the Sixers, most would say, are a better team. I think there's a couple things here. We're going to talk about Ben Simmons. We're going to talk about Doc Rivers. We're going to talk about Joel Embiid because they're the leaders of this team, and they deserve all the good and the bad. And Simmons notwithstanding that situation, coming into this year, I was like, all right, next year will be better because they'll have a normal offseason. Daryl Morey will have a year within the organization. He sees what he's got and make the right moves. The Simmons thing is gonna hang over everything here, but you know, this bench, Doc Rivers. Yeah, I'm gonna have most of my fire towards Doc Rivers. Ben Simmons is just like another Philadelphia sports tragedy. But when you get to the playoffs, man, you got to play everybody that's willing to take a shot or a layup or a dunk when open. You got to play your guys. You can't go 10 deep in the playoffs. You just can't. You got to stagger them so, you know, there's always three of them on the court at the same time. And you can't wait till game 6 or 7 to start doing that. That's how it is from the very beginning. And listen, Embiid's got a torn meniscus. You got to win these games. These are must-win games. If he's playing, you got to play him, you know, the 36 to 40 minutes every game. Hopefully you've got a 26 point lead that you can hold on and you can sit him down. But man, they were just a better team. They had home court. What the hell are they doing? It was the lack of fire, the lack of, you know, we were saying beforehand, fight or flight. There was a lot of flight in these guys. And I honestly think that losing Danny Green meant a whole lot more to them just from his attitude and his championship pedigree, keeping these guys together. It's hard to do it when you're on the bench wearing a mask. I don't know. I'm going to keep rambling on and on. So you just got to interrupt me and cut me off when you got ready to go.
Well, you know, you were just saying that Doc has to play his players who are going to take the shot, that are going to dunk the ball. Well, Ben Simmons wasn't doing any of that. So are you telling me that Ben Simmons should not have been in that rotation? Because Ben Simmons, listen, we've gotten into this on Ben Simmons on more than you know, I think we've talked more about, like, yeah, Claude Giroux, I think, is just friendly banter, okay? But I think we're serious when we talk about Ben Simmons, and we both agree. And, you know, I've been saying this because, like, you like to bring up the stats, which I do appreciate when we're on Green Legion Radio with the guys. And you bring up the stats about how it's more valuable to shoot three-pointers than it is to do the mid-range game, right?
Right. It is.
The part that we've emphasized on that is you have to at least have the threat of doing it, because then the defenses will respect you instead of collapsing back. It's easy double team on Embiid every single time because they don't have to think about it. If you're sitting there at the top of the key and you're Ben Simmons, no one's thinking you're going to shoot because you're not.
Right. But
the biggest problem all along has been his free throw shooting. Like, I've had a gripe with this guy all day long, with 60 to 65% has been his career average. And then we win this series hands down if Hackett-Ben didn't exist. Because the guy could hit 7 for 10 from the free throw line.
Let's just go through Ben right from the beginning here. You're absolutely right, and you look back at, like, we could talk a bit, you know, focus directly on this series. It's a problem. His reluctance to shoot from long distance, This season, this series, though, they win. If he just does his plateau, his border, his baseline 60% from the free throw line with his 10 shots, 12 shots a game, where it's really like maybe two jumpers from the top of the key or something like that, and the rest are dunks and layups, they win. And the free throws getting in his head, like before this year in the playoffs, he was only in the playoffs twice before that. He shot 65% in the playoffs. His percentage is better in the playoffs coming in than regular season over his career until this. And just, you know, the stat, he missed more shots, more free throws in this two series, Wizards and Hawks, those, whatever it was, 12 games. He missed more free throws than Steve Nash has missed in his entire postseason career. And Steve Nash played a hell of a lot of playoff games. So if he had a reliable jump shot, would he be an MVP? Yeah, like these are all true. I never deny it. You could still win with him just doing his borderline top 20-ish player in the league, just his borderline stuff. He's gotten so far into his own head. He's passing off the dunks and his reasoning.
That one at the end of the game, Diaz, was unbelievable. I mean, like, I get, like, you kind of have a feel when you're an athlete. You kind of have a feel when there's people around you or you're going to take a hit, you know, like in soccer, like you knew the ball would be coming to you and you could feel somebody, you could, like, they're not on you physically, but you could just feel their body moving towards you. And it's a matter of like, am I going to make that, you know, am I going to kick it to my left and then I'm going to spin off of them and I'm going to go up the field? Am I going to trap the ball and then they're going to hit me in the back and I'm going to draw a foul that way? Like, you can feel it, but like, there was nothing on that play. Like, Gallinari is not a defensive guy. He is not on your back. Trey Young, if you saw the look on him, he turned up court.
He didn't want to be on a poster. He's like, oh shit, I'm getting away.
He's running away. And it's like, what are you doing? And like, you saw Embiid's reaction and it was just insane. Cause like Embiid was just like, you know, what are you doing? And like, I know we exchanged a high five with him, but Embiid after the game, and listen, you know, I sit here, Embiid is, you know, we're going to get to him. Okay. And I think Embiid does have some of the blame here. But at the same time, I got to give the guy credit, and I will, once we get to Embiid. Simmons, to me, if you're listening across the nation right now, okay?
Diaz Nation?
Not that pitchfork nation of, you know, Captain Dems and Lonnie, because I'll give you Lonnie now. Lonnie's in Diaz Nation. But no, across the nation, you hear Stephen A., Magic Johnson, Charles Barkley, Shaquille O'Neal, like all these guys are saying, Ben can't come back here. We can't do this again with him. What's your thought on that?
Do you want him back,
and can he come back?
Two
separate things, Diaz.
Well, this is things. Yeah. Can he come back? Well, yeah, he can. You know, I don't know how that's going to fit in the locker room. These guys are talking from a place of the locker room, and you know, I think there's a lot of hullabaloo about Embiid and Simmons. I think the conflict that we like to talk about between them. Embiid has made all kinds of changes to his game to help. To help maximize Ben Simmons' skills, and Ben Simmons has not shown that he's working on those things in the game that display during the games. All these first off, we can all agree whether he's here or not, he can't be posting any videos during the summer.
No,
it doesn't matter.
Hell no, good God.
And every report
here or not, no, we do not want those videos anymore. I can't do it. I can't do it for another summer, Diaz. I just can't. You see this? Whatever's left up here, I'm going to lose. If I see another freaking video of Ben Simmons posting this year, working in the gym without his shirt on and all that stuff, like, man, I don't need that crap in my life, man. I don't want to see it. I don't want to hear about it. All I want to know is that when it comes down to training camp, your ass is ready to go if you're here. If you're here.
As far as do I want him here, I'll say it this way.
And you're one of the biggest Simmons supporters.
I want
one of the biggest Simmons supporters.
I want player or players equal to Ben Simmons' true value, which is depressed right now. I don't see, you know, we'll talk about some, I want to answer some questions first here about Ben Simmons, because member of DS Nation, Lonnie Zimmerman, secretary general or attorney general, I guess. I don't know. She's too sweet to be an attorney general. I don't know what the position is. We'll figure that out, Lonnie, but she had two questions. The first off of you know, the Sixers are saying that they can fix him, quote unquote, and was he bad in college? What happens is, and what happens with players coming out of college, they're all prospects. They're all prospects, and teams fail as often as they're successful. Ben Simmons was rated, and right now, I don't know who the kid is. We can look it up. But they've got props, and they've got future, you know, whoever does the scouting. They know who, there's a top kid that's in eighth grade right now. The 2028 class of 2028 or whenever it is, they've got these, they start scouting them that early through AAU and everything. And Ben Simmons has always been the number one prospect. Got to college. Brandon Ingram kind of moved up there a little bit closer to him, but he's always been number one. It's a testament to his skill and his natural talent. It's probably also a contributing factor to some of these problems we come. But when Ben Simmons came out of school, it was elite passer, could be the best passer in the NBA from day one, elite rebounder, elite speed, elite court vision, hesitant jump shooter, doesn't shoot threes, and shows an indifference to defense. All right, so the defense thing, he's canceled. Like, his one thing was that he didn't care to play defense in college. And a lot of people were like, well, you know, if he doesn't have the attitude to play defense, he's not going to want to, which is what some people said. But so
that was disturbing looking.
He improved. Please don't screen grab that. He improved the defense.
I don't want to see it again. So,
but the issue that a lot of people have, which is totally fair, and I have, everyone has, he has not improved enough in the free throw shooting, and he's just not showing any willingness to develop any type of outside game. I believe you could still win with Ben Simmons, not the way the series is, but just his border, like just his baseline as an all-star, not an MVP candidate, not one of the best players in the game, but just a good top 25 guy in the league. I think you could do that. I think it's gotten to a point, he's so far in his head, his fear, it's only like this fear of failure, and he hasn't been able to deal with that because he's been so good at all of these other things. And you hear him in interviews, well, I'm an all-star. It's like, yeah, you're an all-star, that's great. Don't you want to get better? Don't you want to be better? You know, and it's really not, you know, I don't know what the whole deal was with Fultz. It sounds like it was a mixture of a physical problem with a mental block that he had. This one is all mental. I mean, obviously his form is messed up. They might switch him to his right hand, which is probably the best move. But it's so obvious that this is a mental thing. The one thing, besides this clip that we've been seeing over and over on repeat, that's why I just can't even look at Twitter anymore, is the dunk, the missed dunk. But how about the Summer League Simmons videos?
The missed dunk?
What do we call it? The give up dunk? I don't even know what.
I'm surprised there isn't a name put to it already.
We'll find out with something. But I mean, that's going to be an infamous play in Philly sports history. But what bothers me more is the Summer League Simmons videos, where it's like, you got to look it up. It's a minute long. It's on Twitter. It's all over the place. He's shooting left-handed. He looks like he's got a good stroke. Now, I don't know what his percentages were, but I mean, he was shooting the ball well, willing. No big long threes. It wasn't like he was a Ray Allen out there or anything like that. But there was, hey, you want to give me 8 feet? All right, I'll drop a shot. We're not asking for him to be a shooter. Let's clarify a point here. We get into this with Quimby, and then Hollis usually is about to hyperventilate and choke me out, so we kind of move on from the conversation.
Yeah, we saw that last week.
Yeah, so as far as shooting, I think we need to clarify, are we talking about field goal attempts or shooting? I don't think you ever want Ben Simmons shooting 10 to 15 jump shots a game. You're going to lose that game. It's how people defend Giannis. He runs into the same thing. Two-time MVP, great player. Can't really shoot that well. They give him the open threes. Now, listen, Simmons, if Simmons turns it to a point where he's shooting 8 threes a game and he can hit 50%, that's great. But like, that's not going to happen. It's just not realistic. He just has to be a willing shooter sometimes, like you said, to keep the defense honest. Give Embiid some space to work with. The offense of him coming up, handing the ball off to Maxey or Seth Curry, and then just going down into this stupid dunker spot. I never want to hear the term dunker spot again. It's he's way too athletic to be confined to the dunker spot, and it's just not going to change without him being having a willingness to do that. Let's be clear though, he's got to shoot 75% from the line. He's got to shoot 75% from the line.
At least 70.
Yeah, 70-75.
Yeah.
And you know what? There won't be any hack of Ben. He could go to the rim harder because if he doesn't get the dunk or the layup, he'll get fouled and he'll be confident in his foul shot, which will make him go harder into the rim. It's just like a big cycle right there. I'm not worrying about the two jump shots. If they come, they come. The free throw is where it starts. Listen, all you have to shoot for them to stop doing hack of Ben is shoot 60%, which is his career average. He's like shooting half of that. It's absolutely confounding, confusing, disappointment, nauseating. I don't know what happened to him this year. I blame. I'll let you get in here for a second, but you know, are these excuses or reasons? I don't. You tell me if I'm making up excuses. But like the first year, he was a rookie. Crap happens to rookies. It does. It's just they don't perform well in the playoffs, especially in the second round. It's or as the farther you progress. The year after that, Jimmy Butler wasn't giving up the ball in the fourth quarter. He wasn't. He just wasn't going to give up the ball. It was Jimmy's way or the highway, and that might have been the right answer in that series. Last year, he got hurt. This year, I was just, you know, fool me once, fool me twice, fool me three times. I'm a fool me three times guy. Three strikes, you're out. There's just absolutely no reason for him not to be dominant in this game. And we'll get to Doc, but there's no way. That play with Gallinari, with a whatever we want to, we'll think of a name for it, the giveaway dunk or the giveaway,
yeah,
whatever
we have. Yeah, we'll think of something for
sure. We'll think of something. Yeah. It was a beautiful move. He got the ball isolated against Danilo Gallinari, a big, slow oof. And he had a spin move on him, and he had a free look, and he passed out of it. So when we say, like, that's how he could be.
He passed it to a guy that was in double coverage.
That's right. And you know why? Because they were backing away because he had an open dunk for an open two. That ties the game right there. That's how you get him involved in the offense. Why isn't he being matched up doing switches on Trey? Trey Young, and some of these, I think game four, game five, they were throwing Lou Williams and Trey Young on the court at the same time. They might be the two worst defenders in the league. Simmons is faster, smarter, bigger, stronger.
What is this, a Kanye song?
It's just like the free throws and the lack of participation in it, and it's just like giving it away. And it's not like he's not giving it away to the other team. He is hiding on the court. It's not that he's going out and
you're
he's
playing
looking
4-on-5. You're playing 4-on-5.
He's just hiding away from it. He will accept losing more than he can accept shooting free throws at this point. And you know, his value is depressed. I don't know what you're going to get from what you were going to say. I was going on and on there.
Well, just a couple things off the board here. First of all, I'd like to thank our buddy Louise giving me my PhD. And for Dr. Sack, I'm happy to be of assistance to listening to Diaz tonight vent for himself. So I'm taking this bullet for all of you. Russ Taylor said that Ben Simmons is another black man ruined by a Kardashian. Speaking of Kanye. So a couple good things on the board. My question for you. All right. Now, listen, I think the last couple of days we figured out that I know Quimby doesn't want us calling him Doc anymore. I know other people have been trying to run with that the last couple of days. Whatever.
Well, to be fair, that was a Mark Zoom. That was a Zooism. He said that there was only one Doc, but before the season here, they talk with Glenn, Glenn Rivers, and it was all good. Dr. J gave the sign off, so he says Doc, and he's Doc Rivers because he was named after, or the name came because you know, he went to some camp and he was wearing a Dr. J shirt. So they called him Doc. You know, well, I
get it. So, like, for me, I'm still going to call him Doc. I know we'll probably get berated on Thursday by Quimby when we go.
Well, Quimby's wrong. He's not paying attention to the team or the league. He just showed up last week. So
Doc and Daryl Morey, the last couple of days, listen, they're supposed to speak highly of Ben in their after-season pressers, okay? As much as the nation's aware and the 29 other general managers are aware of everything that's happened over the last month with Ben Simmons, you have to still try and raise his stock as much as possible if you're thinking about trading him. But also at the same time, you got to try and boost whatever confidence is left in his lifeless body to try and get whatever the best you can out of him, okay? So my thought after listening to Doc on Monday, and I want your opinion on this, because Doc says that he can be fixed. What are the things that they can work on him with to fix Ben Simmons and get him right and get him back to where we need him to be, which is definitely not what the hell we just saw for the last month. For the most part, not what we saw this season, but it's, you keep on saying the baseline. If this team has any reasonable thought of winning a championship with Ben Simmons being on this team, he needs to be above the baseline.
Absolutely.
I don't need superstar. I don't need top five player in the league, but I need somebody that's going to be above baseline. I need a guy that's going to be almost superhuman. Listen, you can talk all you want about the triple doubles, Diaz, or anybody else can talk about the triple doubles, but a 12, 10, and 10 stat line doesn't do much. Triple doubles to me are at least 20 points, 10 rebounds, 10 dimes. That is a serviceable triple double.
Hey, listen, if he's throwing those stat lines and he's being aggressive to the hoop and he's taking what the other team is giving and he's defending Trae Young, holding him to 5 of 23, that's okay for that game. I get what you're saying. Over the course of a season, when you can't pass up open looks like that. You just cannot pass up open looks. You cannot hide on the offense. Try to get involved. Some games you got it, some games you don't. Some games he got it, some games he don't. It's true with everybody. He's not ever going to be Kevin Durant. You're right, he's got to step up. A couple things, though, because this is the question that Lonnie asked earlier. What can they do? First off, Russ Taylor, Ben Simmons has been in the States since he was a freshman in high school. He played at Mount Verde Academy down there in Florida for 4 years and then a year at LSU. So he has been here since then. He played in Australia up and through like eighth grade or ninth grade or something like that. But what can he do? There's two things. There's the physical and the mental. I think that the mental is going to be more of an issue in two parts. Starting with the physical, he's, one of his good qualities is that he's ambidextrous. He can finish with both hands. Except you watch his games, he's a right-handed player. He autographs right hand. Someone somewhere had written these. There's a video of him throwing a football with the right hand. He's right handed. He signs his checks right hand. When he's coming to the hoop, he's more dominant on the right hand, or that's where his natural tendency gets to go. He said it when he was young. His dad taught him how to shoot left handed because just like a left handed pitcher, it's harder. Left-handed players aren't generally, you don't see as many of them. It's an awkward way. You're used to guys driving to your own left, but when they're driving to your, it's a different look. His dad taught him how to shoot left-handed because he is naturally right-handed. Well, maybe he should be shooting right-handed. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if you're going to stay left-handed, the reason he's not a good free throw shooter is because we don't have enough space here, but he's got his elbow out. It's just like it's so basic. You get taught this like in fourth grade. You got to keep your elbow straight so you get the backspin. He gets no benefit of any backspin or spin when he hits the rim. It's got to be a swish or it's out. If it hits the rim anywhere, it's going to sloop and go out. So those are the things you have to fit physically. The bigger issue here, this is a mental problem, and talking about someone's mental health, I don't know what degree it is. He's had there was a family issue that he was dealing with this year. There's obviously ego and stubbornness. He's been the best player his whole life in his age class. He's an all-star. He's a unanimous first team all defensive player of the year, runner up, rookie of the year. Like, And he goes and he uses these as reasons why he doesn't have to change, or reasons why he doesn't have to confront his weaknesses. The first thing he has to do is be willing. This is terrible. This is why we could say these things on this show and not on Green.
But Hollis would be.
I know he doesn't want to hear it, but it's just like, I mean, this is what, when you say it, it sounds like corny and hokey, but he's got to be willing to be vulnerable, willing to make mistakes, willing to confront his weaknesses. Now, you say that and it sounds goofy because most players that get to this level at some point have had to do that themselves. They haven't raised their hand and gone to the coach and saying, I needed to learn how to be more. They just are like, shit, that was embarrassing. I got to be better. I got to work harder. I got to be better. And I need to seek people out that are going to do that, not my own brother. You know, his shooting coach was his own brother.
You should have put that number one. Fire his brother as a shooting coach. You know, I'm sitting here right now and you know, I look back, Diaz, like 2 years ago, and it's funny. I mean, it's like, you know, the Sixers losing game seven, you know, to Toronto, who eventually wins the title. So you're sitting there, you're like, oh man, the Sixers were in great hands for the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. And you know, the Flyers had this young 20-year-old goaltender, you know, Carter Hart, and you know, the Eagles, Carson Wentz throws them on his back and brings them to the playoffs, and you know, Philly signed Bryce Harper, and it's like 2 years later, as a Philadelphia sports fan, it, like, Ben Simmons needs to be run out of town, and Embiid's hurt again, as great as he was, and Embiid's hurt again, right? Carson Wentz is in Indianapolis. Bryce Harper hit a 431-foot bomb off Scherzer tonight, but he's already got back issues 3 years into a 13-year deal.
Right.
You know, like, you look at it from the standpoint of a Philadelphia sports fan. It's like, for the love of God, like, as good as we thought we had it or it was going to be as we were entering this decade, you know, not only do we get slapped with a pandemic, but our teams look like they're all going backwards. Right.
Yeah. And, you know, success isn't always linear. The Flyers took a step back. That doesn't mean that they're done.
That doesn't mean that Carter. I'm not saying anything that Carter Hart is.
Yeah. You know, I believe in all three of those players. I believe in Carson Wentz. I think he can be an elite.
So do I.
I think Ben Simmons can too, and I think Carter Hart can too. The first step in doing that, though, is you have to be humble. You got to be humble, and you have to accept that
sports are humbling.
You don't have all the answers here, and I think that's the first step for him. He's got all the it's just there. And while he hasn't been a volume shooter, he's done that in the past. It's his weakest point in his game. But Giannis is a weak shooter, but he's a willing shooter. And Giannis isn't going to hit 40% from three. His free throw percentage has gone down. He's in his head too. I think he could be, and same thing with Carter Hart. He's up in his head. I'm not the sports psychologist. We don't have the answers there. We don't know to what develop it. Is it these family issues that he's having? Is it the pressure to be the best? Is it the pressure is it the pressure situation? Is it just a simple attitude issue where he doesn't want to put in the right work and he doesn't want to change his form? He doesn't admit that there's a problem. I think here, you know, he said, oh, it's mental, which is, I think is a good step to say he's having mental issues. In Philadelphia, I mean, Jesus Christ, like that's a lamb to the wolves right there. That's a first step. I just think with Simmons here, it's a huge problem. You're not going to get the equal value of him. Like, what are you going to get? What are you going to get? You're going to get a 31-year-old CJ McCollum who's got the things that Simmons doesn't have. You're going to sacrifice a little bit on defense, okay. But you got a 31-year-old CJ McCollum who has injury issues of his own. Is that equal value? If that's the best you got, I guess.
Why would Portland even think about making that move, though? Unless they were moving him to forward. Because, I mean, Dame is your point guard. So you're not bringing Simmons out there to be the point guard.
Right. That's one of the things. There's been talk, just like with Simmons and Embiid, we just don't pay. We don't listen, you know. People have been talking about splitting up Dame and CJ, who have a good relationship together, but they're just kind of redundant skills on the court. They don't have, they're weak on defense. Simmons would fit that kind of hole, but they also have, you know, Nurkic, who's a traditional center even more so than Embiid is. You know, he's a cement foot guy. They got a power forward in what's his name? The white guy. Zach, I forget what his name is. What it's coming in as like Zach Thomas, but I know that's not the correct thing. But where does he fit? Where does he fit there? What are you going to get? Like with Embiid at this playing at MVP level, we don't know how much time we got. It could end any day. It could last 4 more years or 5 more years. It could, but with his injury,
maximize the window.
That's right, and you got to do it now. And now. I just can't imagine you being able to pull any deals with his salary and what he just showed in the playoffs. There might be some team that'll be like, yeah, we'll take him. We'll give you, you know, 2 first-round picks, a pick swap, and, you know, bench shooter du jour or something like that. Yeah, I think he's just going to be on the team next year.
On Simmons a lot.
Yeah, this is just so, man. He's played in 19 second-round playoff games with a total of 154 fourth-quarter minutes. He's attempted a total of 20 shots. That's just—it's not going to work. You know, it's not going to work. It's unbelievable. Yeah, let's move on from Simmons too. It's whatever.
All right, who do you want
about now? I mean, I want to go after. I want to have to go after Glenn. Glenn, you know. With Simmons underperforming, it's really glazed over. People glaze over Doc, but like these all bench lineups, you know, it's in the playoffs.
Go ahead.
In the playoffs, Hollis. In the playoffs, you don't play 10 players. You don't ever at any game because you need to win that one. The 10 and the 15 player rosters are for those Tuesday nights in Charlotte, those rest days that everyone hates. It's just like everything. You're not going to have a 5-man rotation in the baseball playoffs. You're just not going to do it. You're not going to you're not going to put in your backup goalie in the playoffs. You're not going to do it. You do it in the regular season because you have to give the guys rest and stretch them out. You're not going to play your backup running back or your backup quarterback unless there's an injury in the playoffs. You just don't do it. You can, but then what happens is you have games where the starters come out with, because you're replacing all of them at once, they've got a 16-point lead, and when they come back, they've got a 6-point lead. All you want is when you don't have all your starters on, you just want to remain even. And, you know, the Sixers stunk. The Sixers blew it. The Sixers outscored the Hawks by 20 points over the series. The Sixers outscored the Hawks and they lost. They lost 3 games at home. The starters, quote unquote, did their job. Now, they didn't do their job in the fourth quarter and down the stretch, but they did get out to those big leads. And just Atlanta just feasted on those all bench lineups. And furthermore, Simmons, we just covered his things. Dwight Howard, good backup center, good. They can't be on the court at the same time in the playoffs. They just can't. They absolutely can't. Yeah, there is nothing there. And Atlanta knew it.
And you're playing 2-on-5.
And Atlanta knew it, and they just ran all over them. They just ran all over them. It's malpractice to have Danny Green going against Trae Young. Trae Young is the heart of that team. He does everything. And Danny Green has been an all-defensive team member. But in like 2012, he's 34 years old.
Spurs. I mean, yeah. Like, you know, they're one of the greatest defensive teams of all time. I hear you.
You know, and beyond that, it's not even just that. It's listen, what happened this last game? This last game, besides the freaking Ben Simmons pass dunk, I don't know, pass away dunk. I don't know. We saw Kevin Huerter go to town on Seth Curry. Problem child. Seth Curry was hitting shots galore. Seth Curry was draining threes. He was the second best player on the team in the playoffs. Seth Curry was. He was great. But you turn it around the other end. Seth Curry is a weak defensive player. He's just not a good player. So what did Atlanta do? Instead of going after, they just isolated Huerter and got him in open space. Seth Curry can't stay with him. And Herter's just bearing open looks left and right for everything Seth Curry gave us, took away on the defensive end. How can you not, with a Ben Simmons struggling with a confidence issue, if you're not, listen, if you believe that you can't run plays with him like what he did here with Gallinari because he's going to pass away from dunk, that's fair. But you can design some sort of offensive sets where you can get Simmons the ball near the hoop against a weaker defender. That's just what the playoffs are. And then that's what good coaches do. They find the weak point on the other team and they attack it. we'll get to Embiid and his turnovers. He had 16 turnovers in the last two games, completely unacceptable. But, you know, here come the excuses. What the hell is he supposed to do? The team comes up and they, like, basically, if Curry's not open, they're just throw it to Embiid with 8 seconds left, and he's double teamed, triple teamed, and, you know, he's dribbling the ball up. It's the all bench lineups and not trying to find a better way of getting Simmons involved. That's what you do as a coach in the playoffs. It's just what you do. And this is now what his, since they won a title, this is his eighth loss in game sevens or something like that.
Six and nine now after the other night.
It's, he's got a history of doing this, and he did it again. And all season long, all these reporters, our good friend Kevin Kincaid from Crossing Broad, he would write about this every single game when they got burned, where they had a lead of 18 and the starters came back in and there's a lead of 2. Why do you keep using the all bench lineups? Why? And, well, this is what we like to do, and this is what we feel is best for the team, and da 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 da. And it just killed him. In the regular season, it's different, but maybe you should try Simmons and Howard can't be on the court at the same time. Everyone sees it. Everyone knows it. The stats back it up. Your eye test backs it up, and he continues to be stubborn and press this square peg into a round hole.
I understand what you're saying, okay? I'm more infuriated with Doc over some of the sound bites that he provided throughout these playoffs. You know, calling Ben Simmons a treasure and, you know, pretty much like, you know, I'm not like the typical Philadelphia sports fan that, oh my God, I can't believe Doc Rivers said that you don't know basketball, which means none of us know basketball. We all don't know basketball. Oh my God. How could he say that we don't know basketball? Like the overreaction, like, you know, the city and that the city has. And, you know, I've heard some people the last couple of days, oh, Doc should be fired. The guy's a 5-year deal. He had 1 year here, which was most of the year was COVID restrictions. I mean, like, it's kind of like Girardi. Like, last year, everyone wants to ridicule 60-game season, right? And, like, you know, so far this year, sometimes it takes a coach or a manager a little bit of time to put their stamp on a team. Particularly, you know, a guy that has a high pedigree, you want him to come in here and you want him to win right away because Doc won a title 12 years ago, 13 years ago. It doesn't work that way. Sometimes a matter of coming in and finding out what works and what doesn't, who works and who doesn't, who's going to be on my team next year and who's not going to be on my team, and then getting your bodies in there, getting your people in there that you trust. The thing is about this postseason with Doc, okay, is he had a point guard that had zero confidence. Zero confidence. For those of you that are American Pie fans, okay, remember the
wait. Are there non-American Pie fans?
I would hope everybody's an American Pie fan, but you know, it's like Stifler said to Jim the one time. You know what your problem is? You lack confidence. You're just one big flopping cock, and that was Simmons. Like you can't run, and everybody goes, oh well. Well, you put Maxey in there. He looked great on, you know, in game six. He looked great in game six. Or how about after game two? Oh, we need to see more Shake. What the hell did Shake do the rest of the series? And right. if you thought you were getting an encore presentation from Tyrese Maxey, well, guess what? I like the kid. I enjoy the kid. I really, really do. Okay? And I appreciate what he did in game six. But, you know, say what you will about Ben on the offensive side of the court. Trae Young is not going 5-for-23 in that game if Tyrese Maxey was starting that game and on him the whole game. So you got to get that thought out of your head right now, okay? What he was going into that with, and Nate McMillan, when they came back in game four, they already knew they could win in Philly. They did it in game one. And then they came back in game five. The Hawks knew they were playing with house money. They knew they were playing house money. And I get the all-bench lineup. But it's hard to win when your floor general is a mental head case. He can't get out of his own head. He can't get out of his own way. There's only so much that you can do when the guy's playing 40 minutes a night. Your main ball handler is disappearing and hiding. Like, what is Doc supposed to do in that situation?
You're absolutely right. But, you know, and Luis says it's not all about coaching. It's about the players. The coach is the one that's putting the players on the court. He's the one that's deciding who is on the court at the time.
And, well, who's going on there?
And listen, Simmons is a 1A, 1B with me, Simmons and Doc. I'm not trying to blame Simmons' troubles on Doc.
I'm not trying to absolve Doc of blame here. I'm not trying to do that. But I don't sit here and think that the guy is incompetent. Like, yeah, people want to look at his track record and where he's been and who he's coached and all that stuff. But a lot of times, man, like, especially in the NBA, it's more on the players than it is on the coach in the grand scheme of things. So this team did the same bull crap when they had Brett Brown here, and we would have thought that we were going to get a little something extra. I'll tell you what, if the same stuff happens next year with Doc Rivers in the playoffs, then I'll be the one sitting here going, you know what, it's his fault.
Well, listen, it's not Doc's fault, but he's the one that's control. That's the whole idea of a coach. Listen, you're saying right here, first off, Doc doesn't get the benefit of the doubt. He was brought in here to get him over the hump, which is get him into the conference finals to maximize their star's ability. He had a great success with Embiid this year, with Tobias Harris this year, playoffs notwithstanding. And Simmons, he failed.
At least Tobias shot the ball.
He failed in that respect.
Except for game five.
But this is the thing here. Listen, throughout the year, it wasn't like he wasn't finding out things that worked and didn't work. He was finding things that didn't work and continued. Listen, you get a new coach in here. You bring in freaking whoever the greatest. Bring Joe Torre in here next year, and if he's Vinny Velasquez is the fifth starter in this rotation. And then Joe Torre has a history of sticking with a five-man rotation in the playoffs, even though everyone's telling him, yo, man, why are you doing this? Maybe you should take him out. Did you ever think to take him out? And then the playoffs come, and he does the same thing that he's done in other stops. That's how it is with Doc Rivers. I mean, he got fired from the Clippers last year because he was stuck with playing Harrell instead of Zubac, when all the lineups, all the stats and your eyes showed that Zubac was a better fit in the playoffs than what Harrell was doing. But he was like, this is what I like to do. So it's kind of like, you're right, it is the players, but he's the one that's keeping the players in here, and he's making the substitution patterns. Joel Embiid isn't saying, I'm coming in, I'm not coming in, da da da. No. He's the one that's doing that, and that's his job. His job is to manage the egos, manage the personalities, put his players, just like Andy Reid, put his players in the best position to win and get them over the hump. There's no coach that's perfect. There isn't any coach. There's no player, coach, manager, whatever you want to say. But the criticisms and the faults that people had in Doc down the stretch in Boston and then in LA, when he came here, it wasn't the same exact players. It wasn't the same exact situation, but it's a stubbornness and refusal or inability to adjust on the fly quickly. It's got to take a long time for him to really get this way. I mean, they asked him about the Hackaband back in the Wizards series, and he was like, what are you guys, idiots? Like you said, you guys don't know basketball if you want me to take Ben Simmons out. Well, what did he end up doing?
He had to.
You know, there's only so, and you know what? Probably should have done it earlier. You know, they failed. Ben Simmons failed this year. No improvement whatsoever. We've already been here for 59 minutes. So talking about Embiid, you know, disclaimer, MVP season, had a torn meniscus, was obviously uncomfortable. I'm not even going to – it's – my rule was
– Jokic is the worst MVP in the history of the league. I'm just saying that right now. I think we actually – our last show, I think I said – like, if you look at the list, eventually someday down the line, our kids are going to be like, who is Nikola Jokic?
Yeah. I mean, he's great, and he's a freak too. He just doesn't play defense. He just doesn't play defense at all.
And getting ejected from that playoff game was terrible.
Yeah, terrible.
Like, dude, he like who I forget who he hit or who.
Yeah,
he,
I forget who he hard, punched. Hard, yeah,
quote unquote hit. Like, he didn't even freaking touch him. Like, he might have grazed his face, but he looked like he got shot in the face. It was just unbelievable. I couldn't believe that. But yeah, getting back to them.
Yeah, great player. Just doesn't play defense. And this is the kind of the thing. Yes, MVP. Yes, he was injured. He's just he's really asked too much to do for the kind of player that he is. It's like, how effective would Jokic have been if he played any defense? If he really tried on defense and put an effort in being a rim protector? I mean, Embiid's biggest impact on the court, probably more on the defensive end than it is on offense. I mean, he's the anchor of their defense. He's the reason that they're, you know, last year in the 2020 season, I think they finished sixth in defense and it was a disappointment. You know, they should have been better. So they finished second this year, I believe, in net rating on defense. You can't have him taking multiple dribble. He's going to have eight turnovers a game. I think an easy rule for Embiid is you take three dribbles and then shoot it or get rid of it. You can't be he's not a guard. And I know he thinks he has the handle, and he does. He's got a good handle for a big man his size and his strength. He's graceful in ways that other centers aren't graceful, but not little guys in the perimeter. You're not going to get by him. Eight turnovers in back-to-back games isn't going to do it. Again, everybody's dealing with Simmons and his refusal to even look at the basket. So, you know, throwing more on his plate, but he's a two-way player. He's the best two-way player. He's the best two-way big man, let's say that, in the league, outside of Giannis. But yeah, with his health history, he's just going to need more support. You know, he's going to need more support. Dumping it off to your center, who's out on the three-point line to create space for other players, and then expecting him to just kind of make something up, it's just not going to work.
Embiid needs somebody on the court that's going to dominate the ball and score while he's off the court. And we said this before we came on. I said this to you. Was Embiid is that type of guy where when he's on the court, he wants to maximize all the time. The problem with that is he's so big. He's so tall. And it's not just he's fat. He's not fat. He's a big dude. I mean, yeah. 7'2". He's 275, 280 pounds. The thing is with him is by the time you get to the fourth quarter, he's completely gassed. And we saw that in that game where they blew the 26-point lead. Like, Doc normally lets him sit until seven and a half minutes are left in the game. And the bench lineup blew it so bad that he had to come back in with the rest of the starters with 10 and a half minutes left to go. And at that point, like, the momentum already shifted. You knew they had to play the last 10 and a half minutes. He had nothing left.
Right.
Nothing.
Right. Like,
Embiid is the type of guy, and it would be the perfect combination if you, like, listen, Dame Lillard is a pipe dream, right?
You're not going to get him. He's going to have to demand a trade himself. They're not going
to
get him.
And he's going to have to directly go to Portland and say, I'm not playing for anybody else but Philadelphia. But nobody ever friggin' does that. You know, they all want to go to Miami and the Lakers and, you know, like all this other whatever crap. Who gives?
Well, I mean,
you know, Brooklyn, Harden, Knicks maybe.
Let's be fair. You know, with our guy Kyle Lowry and James Harden in the last 6 months, Philadelphia was on their list. It was on the list.
I got it.
It's not number one, but it was on the list, and they would have approved a trade to go there. You know,
but
so
what I'm saying is,
but he would have to have. And that would be like the best situation.
It would be perfect because you could take Embiid off the court. Like, he can play the full first quarter. You could take Embiid off the court with like 3 minutes left in the first quarter, sit him out, you know, until, and then all you need is the bench to play for like 3 or 4 minutes to start the second. Then you bring them both back on. They finish out the second quarter. Like, Embiid is the type of guy where he's like a specialist, right? Like, if you play him 30, he can get you 40, but he's fresh. He's fresh. He might get you 40 in 30 minutes before you even get to the fourth quarter. And then he doesn't have to play the fourth quarter because you're up so much. Like, the key is finding the proper rotation to where Embiid can be off the floor for the amount of time that he needs to be off the floor for to rest his body. And when he does that, he's not going to become as tired. He's not going to hurt himself, or the likelihood of hurting himself doesn't exist as much. It's when he's playing these big games, these long games with long minutes. And, you know, I've been very impressed by Embiid this year. Couple things where, you know, his immaturity kind of cropped up again in the postseason. More
going, like, after John Collins.
I'm not bothered by that. I'm not bothered by that. There was a couple times where he went after Capella verbally. The Collins thing, now he was poked into that because they were both on the floor and Collins kicked him. Yeah. So I don't blame him for that. And he kept his arms up like this the whole time.
Trae Young pushed him in the back is not fine.
All he did was body him and let him know, because Collins was like laying over the back of the net. All he did was body him and say, yo, dude, I could be your daddy right now, but I'm not going to.
Right.
And that's pretty much what he did. So I was impressed by that. But Capella, there was a couple times where he didn't have to do that. Skipping out in the post-game presser after they blew game five. That's not what a leader does. And another thing that they look like, I don't want to sound like Rex here, okay? But, like, there was nobody on that team. Like, you know, Tobias had that one play where he showed energy and all that stuff. But there was not one guy. It was just Doc in the huddle that was talking to them and saying, hey, we got to do this. We got to do this. Like, man, sometimes you need a peer. You need a player. And not just any player, because maybe Danny Green was that. But Danny Green is in street clothes, like Anthony Davis. So, like, you need a guy that's going to be out there on the court that can sit here and say to everybody before you step back out on the court, yo, guys, listen, this is what we need to do. We got this. Everybody keep your heads on straight. We got this. And, like, you didn't see that. It's just – you know, and yeah. For as vocal of a president as he is, he's not that type of leader. Tobias can't be that kind of leader because he's not as, you know, like his level isn't as up there with Embiid. And then Ben Simmons is just shying away. It's just you need somebody that's going to be out there and just take the bull by the horns, which they don't have on this roster. And I'm hoping that Daryl Morey can find us some kind of dog like that. A guy that's going to come in here and set the tone for the whole team.
With Embiid too, a couple of the, I think I said it on Green Legion Radio, you know, they wasted the Seth Curry game when he had whatever 31 points and shot whatever 7 of 9 from three. You know, they wasted an MVP season from Embiid, and you never know. And it's, you know, you can plan on him, you're going to plan your entire franchise around him. But what a golden opportunity right here. And like what our friend Luis said, they might not be the number one seed, might not be attainable anymore. You never know what happens with Brooklyn next year. But with, you know, Atlanta's obviously going to be a player now. We'll see. Oh, sidebar, side chatter. Thankfully, the NBA is stepping in quickly, or maybe it's 2 years too late. Unlike baseball, who lets things linger on forever, doesn't enforce rules on the book. Thank you, NBA, for stepping in here and eliminating basically Trae Young's bag of tricks with the falling into guys and the stopping short. It's like that Seinfeld episode of Stopping Short. That's what he does. He stops short and lets guys run in behind him. He gets a foul call.
Oh, dude, thankfully, Dwight Howard pretty much teabagged him on the 3-point line.
Yeah. It's just not basketball. You know, you play the game, you get fouled. I hope that I've been saying this for a couple of years here, and it's probably because Embiid's my favorite player and I'm a homer. And I've no qualms about it, but you got to call the game the same way inside and out. Why is it depending on where the basket is? Why is it that Embiid can get crushed like on every play, and he gets calls, and he does get some phantom calls himself sometimes.
He falls so much.
Yeah, but
he's always on the floor.
But on the same time, you grace a fingernail of a 3-point shooter, they call it every single time. I don't want a different game. I want them just called the same way. If you're going to allow some rough play, then allow some rough play when you're outside. Why does it have to be, you have to be inside the key? And it's like, oh, well, you know, whenever I say that to someone who initially disagrees outright with me, it's like, well, they're down by the goal. They're down by the basket. You got to play that way down there. I'm like, okay, well, then why is it different if they're at the 3-point line? Well, because they're at the 3-point line. There is no difference here. There is no rule that you play rough. The rules are the rules. A foul is a foul, and a non-call is a non-call. It just, I'm happy that they're doing that there. Hey, they get to refresh. I hope they just need to go away, get work done in this offseason. They got a full offseason. Their offseason is basically like if they had won the finals or had lost in the finals on a normal year. This is the week about when it would end. So they got a normal off season here. Just regroup and come back. Before this year, Ben Simmons' current situation notwithstanding, my thought going into this season was, well, this will be a year with Maury, Doc, like you say, see what we got here. Maury's not going to be able to turn around this team and make find the perfect pieces in 2 weeks before the season's 3 weeks before the season starts. So I trust Maury. You know, my the beloved Sam Hinkie was a Maury disciple, but Maury's like the big boss at the end of the game. I trust in him making things happen. I love
him him dominating an Eskin today too.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, Howard Eskin, what are these questions here? Like, is this where we are? We're still trapped in like the early 90s of sports radio. Like, can you commit? I need you to say whether you're going to commit to Ben. Like, listen, the only untradeable player on this entire team is Joel Embiid right now, because it's just not going to do it. And that's what every general. And I love how he was like, Maury was like, thank you for defining the job description of a general manager, Howard. Yes, I will be a general manager for the Philadelphia 76ers. And look at all. It was great. Real smart ass thing. But stupid question. Great answer. You're not going to get. It's a year-end press conference. They just lost a disappointing and devastating series. They're not. He's not going to tell people that you're definitely. Who would do that? It's malpractice in any sport. I don't know. I hope they go away, regroup. I feel
you need to regroup.
Yeah, well, I feel cleansed. I feel cleansed from our conversation today, Sack. I appreciate you being there for me.
Dr. Sack is here for everybody.
Dr. Sack sounds like some something that you get off of Pornhub or something like that. I don't know. Dr. Sack.
Yeah, it actually does. I mean, I think that's the reason why we were also talking about Jim with Nadia.
Ah, yes, Dr. Sack.
Dr. Sack was chiming in on that. Thank you for that designation, Louise. Hopefully we'll see you on Thursday night on Green Legion Radio for when Irving Fryer is back in studio with us. I was messaging with Louise last week. And it looked like he was thinking about coming up on Thursday. So
hopefully
we'll get to see him in studio. I know you're not going to be on the show this week.
Wrong. Surprise. Whoa. I am going to be on the show.
All right, I have a personal meeting.
I have a client meeting I need to take care of first, but I will be on the show. I didn't want to skip it. And I got to show my face. The Sixers get eliminated with losing three home games in a 7-game series. I have to be in studio.
So you didn't want Hollis and Quimby running roughshod.
That's right.
On the fact that you weren't there.
Got to protect the nation. That's right.
Okay. All right.
So this Thursday, I will be in there. That. Yep. We'll have former Eagles and Miami Pro Bowler Irving Fryer in studio on our taping for our show for Fox Sports The Gambler Thursday. Sack, do you have any news here? Any big time news that you can provide here before we call it quits?
I was just about to say this upcoming Sunday's episode, and Diaz, you'll need to know this. We are changing our time again this upcoming Sunday for only the second time this season, with the Phillies playing at 1:10 against the Mets. And us not being down at the ballpark at Xfinity Live this weekend because they're on the road. We will be 10 to 11 this upcoming Sunday. So make sure you guys tune in. We'll have some more fun this upcoming weekend. You guys know how I like to play with that second segment. Coming up in the next couple weeks as well, being that we're going to be approaching the All-Star game, me and Murph on the show before the All-Star game, we're going to look back at our preseason picks before the season, see where we're at currently right now in the standings. Do we want to do any tweaks, certain things, maybe mid-season, money lines or betting lines that people should be looking at? So we'll be covering that the show before the All-Star game. And with it being a short week for the Phillies, which they'll probably only play two or three games that week leading into us that upcoming Sunday, I'm going to be doing another edition of Ask Murph.
Oh, nice. That's good. So your preseason picks, did you have, I'm sure your preseason pick of Gabe Kapler leading the San Francisco Giants to the best record in the major leagues.
No.
No? Okay. No. All right. That's strange. No. That's a big guy.
Do I have to say that again?
All right. Let's close it up here.
Do we need to close it up?
Yeah, we got a good time. Oh, no. All right. For Sack, this is Diaz. We'll see you on Thursday, Green Legion Radio. Thanks to Bud Light for making this happen. We're out of here.